start with the public hearing this morning. House Bill 5015, Economic Development Department. And does Mr. Scott have any comments he'd like to make?
I know what you're saying.
Sit down, Kelly. And welcome to the table.
Thank you.
Okay, Yvonne Addington, you want to come forward, please? Oh, there he is. Okay. Morning, Mr. Scott. Welcome back to the committee.
Morning. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, our plan this morning and our revised schedule is to go to the Community Development Fund, which is maybe about 7 or 8 tabs back, one of the green tabs. This is the biggest piece by far of our budget. As you'll see on the first page, it's over 80% of the total funds in the department's budget. Everybody got it?
Yeah.
The source of funds in the Community Development Fund, there's a total of $260 million of limitation here, and as you can see, the sources are listed in the table over on the right of page one. The $36 million in new lottery allocation, about $11 million in lottery carryover, which, as I mentioned last time, that's essentially all expenditure authority for projects that have been committed, but the funds have not been drawn down this time. And then essentially all our program option packages are in the next three lines. They're the sources from lottery back bond proceeds for infrastructure, safe drinking water, mass and Columbia Channel deepening. Then we have a total of $32 million from repayment of loans and treasury interest. I want to caution you that's not all available for spending because probably the majority of it is passed through where we have sold bonds on behalf of communities. We sold revenue bonds, and essentially we collect the money from the communities and then pass the proceeds on to the bondholders. There's a total of $50 million of limitation to cover new issues of that kind where we pool those bond issues. And then there are two major federal sources, the first two, and then really limitation to cover a variety of miscellaneous federal grants that we expect to be continuing into the next biennium. So that's basically what's in the fund in terms of sources. Maybe we'll skip page two for the moment and go to page three. And this is just a table you've seen before, and instead of highlighting the agency total this time, I would highlight the Community Development Fund so you can see the portion of it that is our current service level and then the portion that's the program option packages. And as you can see, the increase in the, or the changes to get the current service level are net of about $3 million positive, including elimination of some one-time things, standard inflation factor of 2.8%, and then pre-commitments by the previous legislative session to Columbia Channel Deepening and some money for the Ports Revolving Loan Fund. But that's how it gets to $36 million that's in the base. Then there are basically four program option packages below $5 million for safe drinking water mass as a federal program, $20 million that's essentially partly to maintain infrastructure at the current level, and $20 million is to bond all our current level of infrastructure. That's about $10 million of that is to replenish the infrastructure funds, which have been drawn down in the last biennium, and 10 of it is really to divert, to allow us to divert $10 million of current service level new lottery allocation to regional strategies. That is $20 million for new infrastructure that would increase our level, and $10 million for channel deepening.
Yes, Representative Beck.
Bill, on those various funds, are we expected to get line items for those when we get specific?
You'll get specific presentations. I'm starting to answer the question.
So are we going to get a list of the infrastructure projects, or is that something that we don't typically do, are these line item projects come out somewhere else in the budget, or?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beck, the legislature has never approved specific projects except by its own initiation. We will show you it later in our presentation this morning. We have an inventory of all the pending projects, and that you can get some idea from that of which ones are most likely to be funded in the upcoming biennium, but because they're pretty uncertain as to when all the other pieces are ready to go, we never know which ones for sure will be the ones that get funded.
But if I call up, we aren't going to be approving a list of infrastructure ports. You know, obviously, channel deepening is a specific project. We're not going to have a list of 20 projects in front of us that we have to approve in this category.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beck, that's correct. Okay. In fact, the only number, the way the budget architecture is, that you approve is the $91 million or whatever amount you decide on, plus, of course, you vote separately on the lottery bond authorization.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Senator Yee asked the question last time. I just wanted to follow up and make sure that I understood it. The safe drinking water 20% match is a true local economic development project or projects to develop safe drinking water locally. And it's in conjunction with some DEQ authorization. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, the state receives, it's actually the health division that receives currently a grant each year from the Environmental Protection Agency that is gradually will build up over time a large revolving loan fund for drinking water and water systems projects. The health division and the Department of Environmental Quality are involved in setting the criteria and approving which projects are eligible, and then our department actually administers the loan fund itself, and we work off a list of eligible projects that we essentially is approved by an advisory board for this, on which there's any department that we all sit.
So those funds are presently in the process of a build-up. We're not using them for the safe drinking water for areas that have high nitrates or other problems in the drinking water?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, yes. We move the money as fast as we can.
Okay.
So that, but I guess my point is that we're getting a new grant every year from the Environmental Protection Agency. This is 2 years of match for those grants, so that won't last forever, but we're expecting for perhaps as long as 8 or 10 years to be getting a regular grant that will enable us that one someday to have a a revolving loan fund, so we're able to make new loans without new federal grants.
Finally, Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 710, Marine Navigation, Columbia River Channel of $3,333,000, and the Columbia River Channel deepening of $10 million in bonds, are those combined then to make a total of $13 million that would be used in the Columbia process?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, that's correct. The 333 is the first installment of $10 million approved by the last legislature, so there will be additional funds in the next two biennia. There was some money, I guess, in the current biennium, and then there will be funds in the next two biennia as well to bring that to a total of $10 million. That's not bonded. That was an advance allocation by the legislature. It's the same project.
So there's a total of $20 million would be the $10 million from the last legislature, which was grant, and then $10 million of bond.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, that's correct.
Okay.
As I mentioned the other day, the sponsors of the project are asking for an additional $7.7 that wasn't in the governor's recommended budget, and we support that. And that's the way the bond authorization bill is coming to you.
I'd indicate for Representative Butler, this is a policy decision that was made probably two biennials ago to set aside this money for the channel deepening of the Willamette and Columbia River estuaries as they come into Portland. Part of the request this session is asking for an additional $7 million because according to the federal match, and the federal match is being worked on in Congress right now, would require this case to come up with an additional $7 million to match for the federal funds. And so that request, and Mr. Scott is in here for the additional $7 million.
Mr. Chairman, that's not in the governor's
Okay, so that's something we're going to deal with outside.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Kelly Fields with the Department of Administrative Services. One of the governor's representatives in the Port of Portland discussed this at great length, and it was decided that the state would support half of that request, and the port would support the other half. But I know there's been other discussions where the state would have the full seven, or provide the full 7.7 requested.
Okay. And then the question that Representative Butler asked about the Marine Navigation Columbia River Channel, even though that was enacted, what, two biennials ago? 95? 97? Okay. So, are we going to have to enact any other legislation, or does outstanding legislation exist, and all we do is put the money in the bucket?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that all we need is the money in the bucket, or essentially the commitment.
Okay.
So that we can get the federal authorization and actually start the project.
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, the money is allocated through the Community Development Fund. The Commission would allocate this money to the Marine Navigation Improvement Fund, which is a legislatively authorized fund, too, that essentially what it does is provide state match for dredging projects of the Corps of Engineers, including this one. Normally they're pretty small, but you may be remembering that fund, when it was created several biennia ago, I think maybe 91, was actually with the view forward to this project.
Okay, Mr. Chair, just a comment.
Representative Butler.
It seems like every time I learn a little bit more about the Columbia dredging, it seems to become a little more expensive each time, and there's bits and pieces and chunks of it in various parts here, including the 1997 legislature's authorization of $10 million, and then this a lottery bond back to $10 million, and then the $7.7 million, or seven, which became $7.7, which would be half from general fund and then half from the port itself. So it appears that we're up just to this, on the dredging portion of it, to $27.7 million at this point, if I understand. Are there more amounts that we're going to be looking at more than the $27.7 million.
Federal match.
Yeah, that's right. The decent federal match coming on the $7.7 million.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, I believe the total project cost is $182 million. $27.7 million will be Oregon's share. Washington share would be another $27.7 million, and the federal government would pay the rest.
Thank you.
Okay. If you want to.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, wait a minute here. Vendor bids.
Have we released any of the first $10 million?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Duke, I'm sure the answer is no.
Mr. Chair, I want to clarify. The first $7 million was the $710 million.
The first $10 million that we was it two biennia ago. We approved $10 million. Bill has just said something that made me wonder if we'd actually released any of that money.
Mr. Chair, Senator Duke, the fifth quarter lottery allocation released it to the department, but I don't believe we spent any of those resources.
I misused the term release.
Let me ask Kelly then if it's been released to the department. Is it in the interest bearing account?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is they will receive resources the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th quarter of this biennium, so they have most of those they will receive resources in the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th quarter of next biennium. And yes, those are an interest-bearing account.
So the interest is accruing to?
To the account. To the marine navigation account.
Okay. Yes, no,
I was just going to say that 710 was set up in such a way that there weren't any direct costs out of the current biennium or direct allocations out of the current biennium. It all starts in the next biennium.
Okay. Henry?
I think the last session we talked about 10 million. And this session, why is it 17.7? What is the reason for increasing another 7.7 million?
Mr. Chairman, I can answer the question. We do have a presentation on this later, and we'll have representatives of the Port of Portland here to answer. I think the last session understood this was a down payment on the larger amount. We had a rough estimate at that time, but we didn't have the level of engineering study and the quality of estimate that we have now. But I think that we had part of our budget presentation and understood at the time that we were just looking for some kind of a commitment to get the project started, or to get the commitment, and to make the benefit aware that the state was prepared to commit to its share of the project.
You have more presentation later. Mm-hmm. I think last time you say there's a page that describes it. What's the page number?
If I can, Senator, I'd rather not move ahead in our discussion. Former Senator Mike Thorne, the director of Port Department, is going to be here. He's going to make some comments, and I'm sure he can answer all your questions.
Well, we'd be happy to hear from former Senator Thorne. But I would appreciate the page number so I'll read it ahead of time.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, the page number is behind the tab, program option packages under the Community Development Fund. The Community Development Fund green tab, and then there's a white tab, program option packages. It's page 5 behind that tab.
Senator Duke.
When we do that presentation and all of that, would it be possible to request someone from the Corps of Engineers to come as well? I don't know, this isn't getting a hearing in any other place, and I have some questions about the what if. There's a lot of potential lawsuits hanging out there, and there's some. The draft environmental impact statement came under considerable attack. Some of those kinds of what's the likelihood we're going to be spending it to?
Mr. Chair, if I might suggest, we will have in front of us a lottery bond bill that authorizes this project, and I would think that might be the appropriate time to do that kind of in-depth review.
Okay.
I think that's 2153, something like that.
Okay, Mr. Scott, if you'd like to continue.
Okay, just quickly, I want to just describe what the Community Development Fund, why it was set up the way it is, and then I want to turn it over to Brett Wilcox, the chair of the Economic Development Commission, to describe how the commission has carried out the authority the legislature delegated to it last time. Essentially, if you turn to the next page, page 4, you've seen this before, but this is kind of the line items. Of course, kind of the large categories, and then the specific categories of program, which up through the 1995-97 biennium, the legislature actually had more line items than this in the budget that the legislature approved, and including some small transfers to very specific contractors. Last session, when the legislature made the decision to reduce the budget, the subcommittee proposed that we would delegate to the Economic Development Commission the decisions about specifically which money went where, since there were a lot of questions about exact amounts available in each fund, the amount of carryover, questions about relative performance or results of various programs, that I think the subcommittee determined that it would never be able to adequately deal with, and therefore delegated those decisions to the Economic Development Commission. And so the middle column on this page, or the second vertical column on this page, is what the commission actually, the decisions that it actually made about where to allocate funds. It still has some funds held in the Community Development Fund that have been targeted to specific funds, but not yet allocated because the cash isn't needed yet. And that process, as you'll hear, has saved a good deal of, I think, problem, because it permitted us to put money where it really was needed, and we were, and that, by that means, we were able to take care of things we might otherwise not have been able to take care of. At the very close of the legislative session, when the subcommittee had decided that it wanted a thorough look at how particularly the grant and loan money, but really all the programs in the department were being executed. As you'll recall, it set up and worked through with the governor a process to create an interim work group. At the same time, the term of the then chair of the Economic Development Commission, Chuck Armstrong, was expiring, and the committee wanted the chair of the Economic Development Commission to chair the work group. So the governor at that point put the arm on Mr. Brett Wilcox, who's the owner of Northwest Aluminum in the Dalles, to and is also the vice chair of the Oregon Progress Board, to take on those chores of the chair of the interim work group and of the Economic Development Commission. And we thought it would be a good idea if Mr. Wilcox described for you this morning kind of how the commission and we, with their direction, went about making decisions about, you know, where to take the cuts and the kind of information they've had available to them and so on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to talk very briefly, then I think the plan is to bring up some of the stakeholders to give their perspective of what happened. But just from my personal perspective, as Bill said, I was brought in the fall of 97, basically, to try and implement the legislature's directive. And I personally took as my Bible the budget note that the last legislature attached to our last budget to describe how they wanted the department to change. And that budget note has had some very significant impacts on the Community Development Fund. The legislature, in its wisdom, basically said, hey, big picture, we are substantially reducing the amount of dollars available for community and economic development, but we want to get essentially the same job done. So in order to do that, we need to provide greater flexibility. And in the budget note, from my perspective, it did several things. First of all, it gave us very, very clear marching orders of substantively what our objectives were. We were to focus on rural and distressed communities, number one, and we were supposed to focus on existing Oregon businesses rather than attracting new out-of-state businesses into the state. So we had very clear substantive direction about where we were supposed to go. We also had very clear direction on how we were supposed to get there in terms of allocating the Community Development Fund. There were basically a transition period in the fund where for the first year of the last biennium, the legislature said, we're moving from this system where we as a legislature have a large number of very specific line item amounts to specific recipients. But in order to provide a transition, we want you, the commission, basically to continue these levels of appropriations to these entities. So our first year's job was very easy, but you gave us very specific direction. But the direction you gave us to follow that was basically get the job done in these broad categories, but you have flexibility in how you allocate the dollars between different stakeholders and recipients. And so we tried to follow your direction, and in the interim work group proposal, we felt that to begin with, we needed to have some standards that we would apply for these allocations. So we had the substantive standards, the rural distressed and existing Oregon businesses. But in terms of what principles we'd apply in the interim workup's report, we focus on flexibility, number one, developing partnerships with the service providers. Accountability was probably our key overriding principle, and efficiency of the investments were the four principles that we wanted to apply to measure and test each specific allocation. And I think what we were able to do over the last biennium, applying those principles, was fairly amazing. The legislature had moved from in the community budget fund in the previous biennium when it was allocating by particular items from a total of about $50 million down to a fund of $39 million. So we essentially got the same level of effort accomplished by following those principles. We were able to, instead of having specific dollars coming full for particular projects, when you don't in advance know which projects are going to be ready for to proceed with when, we were able to target them to the projects that were ready and the highest need. And to give you a very clear example, on the PAP system, when we had what I call cubbyhole appropriation, the legislature basically would have to fund each category expecting that you'd have all the potential projects come to fruition. And so historically, these particular cubbyholes have built up large reserves that were available but hadn't been tapped. What we were able to do as a commission was basically if instead of having a system where you fund the maximum amount that each individual agency project might need, and then having in total too many dollars available and surplus building up, we were able to move the surplus that's built up in one small area because there hadn't been programs that were yet ripe to proceed with into another area where there was a clear need, and maintain the same overall level of services over the last biennia that we'd previously gotten. And I think that was a huge accomplishment of the commission. And we did that in a very consensual way with all the partners, the economic development partners and stakeholders, meeting with the commission to define what were the clear needs and priorities and making sure that those needs and priorities are met. The commission, in implementing this model, has tried to use the flexibility in a way to assure accountability and the maximum efficiency of state resources. We wanted to meet your objective of getting a continuity where particular service providers could be assured that they were going to still get the funds that they needed for their programs. We wanted to make sure we were improving the programs. So in our departmental contracting out, we would have very specific goals and objectives that they need to meet in order to get continued funding. And we tried to do this in a consensual way, working with the particular service provider to say, this is what our mission is, this is how we're going to measure whether we're achieving the mission, and get some very clear accountability measures. And we tried to create a system where it wasn't a zero-sum game where particular service providers were fighting over a limited amount of dollars. To give you an example, in business and economic development, you had small business development centers and minority service providers basically were not at all well integrated. And so as a commission, what we did the last biennium was say, there isn't the same total dollars available, but we can get the same total services if you can, instead of fighting over, you know, serving the same clients, you can work together and come together and use the same dollars more efficiently. And so we were able to get the small business development centers and minority support providers to work very closely together to pool their efforts, if you will, so that they could meet the needs of everyone out there with fewer dollars. And I think the commission, procedurally, when we develop our budgets for the Community Development Fund, tries to instruct the department to meet with the service providers, bring them in up front. We as a commission want to hear in advance what they believe the needs are. We do a preliminary allocation and try and define what the mutual goals and objectives are. And then we have at least a quarterly reporting system where the department comes in and gives a presentation on, you know, these were the goals you set out, this is what we've expanded, how far the progress we've made on the goals. Each year we do basically a scorecard, a report card on how the agencies have been doing. Survey the end users of the services that are being provided and see how satisfied they've been with the services have been provided, and try and hold the particular service providers accountable to achieve the policy directives that you asked us to achieve in the budget count. So I think we've made a huge amount of progress towards having an efficient and accountable system. And I also think we've been able to basically maintain the same level of effort in the past because you gave us a more flexible community development fund. Instead of having particular line items targeting each thing, we're able to move it around to meet those projects when they're ready with the greatest need. I think that's given the state a much bigger bang for the buck than it got under the previous system of dedicated line items. So with that, what I think would be most helpful to the committee is to invite up some of the stakeholders in economic and community development and let them give their perspective on how the systems work.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Wilcox, I'm glad to hear that you have quarterly reports and you have measures to demonstrate accountability. I have asked for performance measures before. So when you talk about small business, can you tell us what their performance, how many jobs have they created, what does it cost per job, what is the return on investment, and what is the accessibility to the community they serve? How many minority business, how many women business do we serve? Because you have 10 small businesses under the three programs. What kind of criteria do you use? How much to increase their funding? Some of them you have flat funded, and some of them you have doubled your funding, and some of them you have given them 50% increase in funding. I'm interested to know what kind of criteria do you use to make your decisions on funding. I have asked for this since April 16th. For the line items of each of these programs. And I know you said you will give it to us. And I think small business budget hearing is coming up on Monday. Is this something you can give us so help the committee to make some informed decisions?
Certainly, Senator, I very much appreciate you copying me on the letters that you've sent to the department. I've had discussions with Bill and the rest of the department about the need to make sure that the information is in the format that best meets your needs. We as a commission see the information in the way that we thought several biennia ago it was the way the legislature thought it was. There was an agreement on how, what format the information we put in, so that's the format we've been using. I understand now that that format isn't what best meets your personal needs, so the department's in the process of...
Not personal, committee use. It will be useful for the committee.
It will be very useful for the committee, but you know, just so you know our perspective, the format we've been using in the past was what we thought, you know, several sessions ago the committee had asked for that format. So that's the format we've been producing this information in. And we're in the process of changing that format so it can meet this committee's current needs. And so I've been told that information will get to you early this week. And so you should have all that. Those are exactly the sorts of things that we're looking at in deciding how we allocate the dollars. Because, first of all, you know, I would say big picture, when the commission makes an allocation of dollars, it looks at the substantive criteria that the committees and structures to follow that we target rural and stressed communities and existing urban businesses. So that's our first touchstone. The second thing is we're trying to target those dollars in a way that improves the efficiency and accountability of the services being provided, rather than having an entitlement system where there's a line item that goes to a particular service provider regardless of whether they do the job or not. We're trying to say, yes, you historical providers will get the support as long as you do a continually improving job, and we keep trying to give them carrots and sticks to make sure you have a continually improving job. And, you know, I've been a huge supporter of the small business development centers, because I think historically they've done a great job, and it's, as a commission, my goal to meet the funding needs that they have. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't use the flexibility we have to make sure that they keep getting better. And we've done things to encourage providing all the information over the Internet as opposed to very expensive one-on-one counseling with everybody. We've done things to encourage that they work much more closely together with the other service providers, particularly in the minority area. And I think those are very helpful things in terms of the cost effectiveness of the total system, even though we're going to get there at the end of the day.
You say they're doing the job, but on the sheet here, it shows a cut. And I don't understand what kind of data do you use to give them a cut. I think it would be very helpful if you give it to us in one page, name all the 10 small businesses, and show separate columns how many jobs they create for the period of 97 to 99, or the latest data you have. Jobs created, how much does it cost per job, what kind of return on investment, and what kind of community access do they have, what can programs on one page, so we can make a comparison and see which one is successful and which one creates most jobs and which one you get the most bang for our buck.
If you would like to prepare that information for Senator Yee or whoever else might want to have it on the committee, I really personally am not interested in it because I'm not interested in micromanaging your agency. You're the commission. It's up to you to establish those priorities and try to keep the politics out of it. I'd rather maintain the kind of arm-length relationship with you and not get involved in overseeing and second-guessing and say maybe you should have given to this one or given to that one. So for that regard, answer Cindy's question, do it in writing, provide it to her, and anybody else on the committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
While I'm interested in information, and also for the members' information, this is required by statute. So we need to have that to have good decisions.
Okay. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's what I was going to bring up. I don't think it's just for Senator Yee. I believe it is from Mr. Chamoff. It's statutory that we receive that information in order to make decisions. So.
Recognize that.
And we will get that information.
Thank you. No question. Okay. Senator Yee.
Good question. I'm interested in what Senator Yee is talking about. I never can find the time to get into the depth that she gets into with this area, so I appreciate her tenacity, but I've been curious from time to time, and I have a few moments to think about it. Do we do any running numbers on, we've been up and creating jobs, supposedly, for a number of years. Do we know how many of those jobs are still around?
We do try and do follow-up several years later. We don't go back to the very beginning continuously, but what we look at is, you know, what's projected before you make a decision about a program, what happens within a year or two afterwards, and then we'll do, I know we've gotten reports on some areas about that.
A lot of small businesses don't make it past a certain number of years, and we do a lot of things, small business centers and other things, to try to keep make sure that ours, the ones we invest in, have a better shot at it than most. But I, every once in a while, I just wonder, over time, we're out there creating economic development, but for how long a period of time?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Duke, the only information we collect comprehensively, really, is on the number of jobs that are estimated to be created at the time the initial decision is made. Some of our programs, I think all the small business programs, and I think Special Public Works and something else, have survey work done on a follow-up basis that verify, in fact, whether those jobs were created or not. We do a general survey of our customers that gives us a frame of reference as to whether our estimates are being met or not. I don't know of any study that has gone back and looked in the several years later at how many of those jobs still exist. I think in the analytical work we've done, we have always just assumed that what the employment department tells us is the average life of a job in Oregon, which I think is 9 years, is what we would assume would be the case for the jobs created with the department's assistance.
Five years later, that the jobs are still there.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Duke, as I say, obviously, I suppose the basic answer to your question is we don't know for sure, and there really isn't very good data on how long jobs last in general, or you know, that sort of thing. There are studies that people use as the touchstone, and I can't recall off the top of my head how the employment department gets to their 9 years, but it has to do with how many employer records are created and destroyed, you know, for every year by those counts. I would say there's been a lot of effort to do this follow-up work in the job training area as to whether the people still have their jobs. I think it might be very interesting data that might give us some guidance. We know from that experience that it would be, I think, quite expensive to obtain that information. I guess I would say it would be something we could probably incorporate into our biennial survey. We could probably do some additional surveying at moderate expense where we, instead of just calling the previous biennium customers, we went back, you know, a couple of biennia to to find out what has happened with those projects. But the answer is we really don't have anything other than anecdotal information.
Even 5 years. I mean, if you can give someone a job in 5 years, you've done a great deal of training. You've improved their chances of being able to go out and do something else if that job fails. You've put a lot of money into an economy.
The one other question I have for you is enterprise zones. When the local government creates an enterprise zone, economic development have any review or whatever is created in that enterprise zone job-wise?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that we have reports that I think the zone sponsors are required to make to us about how many jobs have been created by the companies in their zone. So yes, we do have job information on the enterprise zone.
Okay.
So I'm not sure about the whether they go back and check or whether that's a one-time number.
One of the problems I've run into is I had a county assessor get a hold of me. And he said, everybody that's a county assessor okays the formation and creation of an enterprise zone. Then the responsibility is pushed out on the county commissioner or county assessor to make the verification, assessment, and determination that they in fact qualify for the next year's tax rolls based upon job creation. So if the county assessor doing the extension either local government has or economic development, it's almost like a catch-22 here. Now, what I'm going to do is propose a budget note that you come back with a proposal in the next session to clearly delineate whose role it is for an enterprise zone, who administers it, who creates the jobs, and how do you track it? Because I think it's very frustrating to say, we got all these players at the table, but only one has to make the decision and eat the cost, and that's the county assessor in this thing. So I'd like to propose at the proper time that we consider this budget note to allow the commission to review this procedure during the interim and report back on some specific recommendations.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, we'd be happy to follow up with you on that.
Cindy?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To answer Duke's question, I think one way we can look at the success of my business is look at the impact it has on the unemployment rate of the region, because there are a lot of high unemployment, especially in the distressed and rural area. And if a small business can create an impact on an employment rate, that's one way we can look at the success of the program. Not every small business stays, but if most of them prosper, that means.
Would you like to know though if they were still around?
I do. But I think a general idea would look at the unemployment rate of the region, because
we do have a lot of employment in the rural part of the state, and we hope that our programs are making an impact. And that would be good to know.
Okay,
thank you. Would you like to start bringing your people up?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, just by way of introduction, we have, in terms of who is able to come on short notice when we change the schedule, we have Mike MacArthur, who's the chair of the Association of Oregon Counties, Sue Cameron, who has chaired the what we call the Local Government Summit and its subcommittee, and Mike Jordan, who is Clackamas County Commissioner but represented the League of Cities in the interim work group process. All these people worked closely with the Economic Development Commission, not only in implementing the community development fund, but actually in building the budget and all the program option packages that are in this budget really grew out of that of what we call the local government summit process and let them to show you kind of where the budget came from that you brought. Who's going to start? Mike?
Sure, and members of the committee, I am Mike McCarthy, Sherman County Judge and President of the Association of Oregon Counties. During the interim, based on the budget note from last session, I was a member of the work group that was created to look at the principles around public investment in community development. Community development is an area that I've been involved in for my whole time in elected office, which is 7 years, and prior to that, representing a county that's far below average in terms of job creation, any kind of new businesses locating there, and any kind of growth. It's crucial that we begin to find ways to be able to help the people in the county to maintain our quality of life. I want to say that I support the budget proposal that's here, and the county supports this budget proposal. I wish it were more. I think that and this is a good start. This is a restoration budget. This is not something new. This is coming back to the levels that we were at previously. What's new is the approach and the way it's done. Many of the members of the work group were representatives of private business. We had a significant private sector element there. We also had the commission, the Economic Development Commission. Brett and the other commissioners went through the whole process over a year with us to listen to all the community members that came and talked to us about what the needs were in the state. Having the commission involved raised their level of knowledge to help them make better decisions about how this is allocated. We also had legislators with us. Senator Lynn was one of the appointees and involved in that, as well as Senator Nelson, and Senator Gordley was very closely involved. Representatives Westland, Welsh, and Taylor helped us develop these principles. So what I'm saying here, basically, is that this wasn't developed in the back room at OEDD. This was developed with community partners throughout, and that included the budget. When the New Directions Group issued its report, the work went on, and we'll hear more about that in a minute. The focus of all this program, the community development program, I think that came out of New Directions, is that we should be solving problems, not just running these individual programs. And the commission needs the flexibility to address those problems as they come up. The biggest problem we have is that growth and prosperity are not evenly dispersed around this state. My analysis shows that at least 23 counties are below average in growth. There are different measures can show different, you can measure that in different ways, but significantly those counties are in the rural and eastern and southern parts of the state. So if we're going to try and solve that problem of unequal distribution of prosperity, how do we get at that? What's the process or mechanism that government should use in dealing with community development issues? Where should government make investments? We often hear talk about creating jobs. I don't believe that governments should be in the business of creating jobs. Entrepreneurs create jobs. What government needs to do is create an atmosphere where jobs can flourish, where entrepreneurs can work. I think that's where the basic fundamental of these programs starts. The government is the facilitator, in other words. We start with basic needs. What does a business need to be able to flourish? Well, you start with the infrastructure. You start with water, sewer, and now telecommunications is a big part of that. If a business is going to locate anywhere in the state, they're going to have to be connected. But that's another issue for another committee, perhaps. We also need local capacity. The local government that's trying to facilitate and create this atmosphere where businesses can locate and get started needs to have the capacity to make that happen. Now, my experience in working with this is you have to have somebody there to talk to, and somebody to organize the community, somebody to write the grant applications if necessary, to work with the department. That takes local staff. Much of this, parts of this budget help communities establish local staff through the regional investment program. We need to have the toolbox of resources available. Typically, when you start working on a project, there's many different aspects of that project that need a little push or a little help, and government needs to be able to have a help do a survey or a feasibility study to move the project along. We have a portion of this fund called the Community Facilities Program, which is really the gap financing. Even if you have an infrastructure program with water and sewer loans and grants, a lot of times an NC isn't able to get there. They can't get to the table, or they can't put the deal together because they need a bit more
financing to get some other piece in place, and that's what the community facilities part does. We have a new approach, I think, here to community development based on what the work group gave us, the new directions report, and that involves regional partnerships, which are broader, include more members of the community as they're being developed. I'm the chair of one of the pilot projects in the Sherman, Gillum, Wasco, Wheeler, and Tribes of Warm Springs projects. And we've taken a revised approach, a new approach, to the way we're doing regional investment, and that includes the use of the community solutions team, which means we're not making these investments in isolation. We're working with 4, 5, or 7, in our case, state agencies, to develop a plan for the community and to make smarter investments. What I'd like to do now is to turn it over to Sue Cameron, Sue Cameron, who was the county's community development steering committee chair, to talk about what we've done since the work group finished its work and the coalition that's coming to you in support of this budget. So.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Sue Cameron, Tillamook County Commissioner, and I chair the Community Building and Infrastructure Committee for Association of Oregon Counties. This issue of community and economic development is one of Association of Oregon County's main priorities, and we've spent a great deal of time focusing our energies on this issue. We think it's critical for communities across the state. As you're aware, the interim committee came up with a number of recommendations, and first and foremost, I think, was a restructuring of how do we do this work. And they came to us and said, well, we want the counties to realign, however you want to realign, to do some type of regional approach to this. Well, that sounds very nice, but if you've ever taken a group of 36 counties with all sorts of different alignments, whether it be around transportation or economic development or regional strategies, and say, okay, realign yourselves, and we don't really care how, we just want you to reflect your values. Let me tell you, that was not an easy process. And quite frankly, with that direction, initially the county said, forget it. We're not going to do this. We already have all sorts of alignments. Well, it didn't quite meet the concept of what the interim work group had hoped, nor did it meet the concept of the community solutions team, which the governor had hoped would happen. And we said, okay, wait a minute, time. Let's stop this process for a moment. Let's go back to what really needs to happen to be successful in this approach. So what we did was we took the cities, took the counties, the ports, the Economic Development Commission, and state agencies and the governor's office and said, okay, let's line out our interests and see if we can't come to some agreement in a summit to see if we can't actually make this happen. We recognize that the interim work group has some very strong values about how this needs to play out along the state as well as the governor's office. But how do we really make it so counties feel comfortable with their alignment? We still have access to funds. How do we still meet the city's needs for direct funding for their infrastructure projects, and how do we still meet the issues around the port and look at the issue around community solutions team? So we started with a summit, and actually now Commissioner Jordan and I co-chaired that in his previous role with the League of Oregon Cities, and we brought folks together and we worked through this. We have had 5 summits, and each time the work that we did started getting us closer and closer to an outcome that we could all agree on. And that agreement basically was the fundamental part. You will see this in the budget now. This budget reflects agreement of all of those entities. This was not a simple process. We had a facilitator. We needed a facilitator. But we found agreement. And I would say to you that we are all in complete support of this budget, and we had a major hand in building this budget. In terms of the regional partnerships, which I think is really phenomenally new way of doing business for our state, I think we'll be successful. Right now we have 4 community partnerships, which reflect 12 counties and the Warm Springs Tribe. Those 4 partnerships, which include the Northwest Regional Partnership, which our county is a member of, and in fact kind of broke the mold when we said we want Tillamook, Class of Columbia, and the rural part of Washington County. And we were approved, that was approved, and our regional partnership has really look at some new ways of combining our efforts to meet our community needs. We have Jackson Josephine, we have Klamath Lake, and then we have the Lower John Day, which Judge McCarthy just described. Those regional partnerships are aligning with the community solutions team in a way that we believe will change the way government works in our community, because we're not going to be doing projects and then coming to the state later and saying, will you approve this? State partners are at the table when we design these projects, and we think that's a critical part of that. Most of the rest of the counties are lining up to form regional partnerships. We have some proposals in the metro area, the Willamette Valley area, and what they call the Big Five in Eastern Oregon. So those are in the works right now. So in terms of summary, I would say that this provides us local flexibility in our communities. It reflects a consensus-based approach to this budget, and I would ask that you support this budget and give us any other ideas or thoughts, because we do have another summit coming up in which we'll continue to address these issues.
Thank you.
Yes, you can.
Chairman Hammond, member of the committee, my name is Mike Jordan. I'm currently the county commissioner, or a county commissioner in Clackamas County, but I come to you today probably more in the role of my previous life. I represented cities for the League of Cities on the interim work group. You've heard probably ad nauseum from us about how wonderful this is. I maybe would like to take a slightly different spin on my comments this morning and try to present to you from my perspective what your problems are with this, or issues that you need to look at. Our work revolved out of the budget notes from the 97 session, and there was a clear charge to take a hard look at not only the way we did economic development in the state, but also to expand the scope of that discussion from pure economic development to economic and community development. What does it take to make a viable, livable, sustainable community in the state of Oregon? You're all very aware of the diversity of the problems in the state. As Judge Sherman has noted, a significant number of counties with higher than average unemployment, lower than average growth rates, and very difficult problems. The prosperity of Oregon has not been visited equally across the state. Couple that diversity of problems with the fact that we always will, and currently do, have limited resources to deal with those problems. The Economic Development Department suffered a significant cut in its resources last session, and we are hoping to restore those now, but we will always have limited resources. So you're facing a couple of very difficult issues. How do you spread those resources to a very diverse group of problems in the state, and do it in a rational way? We were presented with some options, and I chaired a group that worked on the program part of the Economic Development Department, taking a hard look at the programs that are currently being delivered. Could those programs be realigned, made more accessible to communities that don't have the capacity to play the game, if you will, of economic development as well as others? How could they be consolidated or realigned so that they were easier to use? I worked with a group of agency folks for several months, taking a look at all the programs, not just economic development programs, but all of the ones from the Community Solutions Team agencies, the five agencies. We made some recommendations on how to consolidate some, how to do better information gathering and sharing on others, how to make forms and requirements of very small communities trying to apply for these programs easier. We came up with some recommendations, and they're in the materials. But I want to be very clear about the problem we were dealing with, and I think it is the problem you're dealing with, on this issue of flexibility, on the issue of trying to solve problems rather than run programs, and how do you do that? To be very honest, the cry from local government at the beginning of this process was, don't feed us any more programs, just write us a check. Just send us the money, and we're best to know how to deal with that, our problems in our areas. When you take a hard look at the amount of money that the state spends through the programs for the five agencies and the Community Solutions Group, you will find that if you take all of the money all together, spread it out in block grants to all 36 counties and the 240 cities in those counties, you will find that it spreads thin like peanut butter. You can't build water treatment plants in Elgin or anywhere else for the kind of money they would get if you just put it all in a pot and divided it up and sent it out to them. It just doesn't work.
creates a dilemma for you. So then how do we strategically spend the money in the places that need it the most on the kinds of projects that will do the most good in those communities? It begs the question of flexibility. It begs the question of how do you put together a process at the state through the Economic Development Commission that money can be gathered together in a few pots, and over the course of a biennium, it can be distributed in strategic ways to do the most good in the most communities across the state. And I think that's the crux of the dilemma that you face, and that's really the structural issue around this budget that you have to grapple with. We believe, having worked with the partners in local government and with the Economic Development Department and, quite frankly, all of the CSD agencies and the governor's office, we believe that we in this budget have blended a combination of those two extremes on the spectrum. Money being distributed in very clear silos with very clear policy targets, and the need for incredible diversity to face the problems that face all the communities in the state, from growth management in the metropolitan area to pure job creation in many other parts of the state, and everything in between. I believe that we have done a good job of a first step at trying to create that kind of a process. Quite frankly, there will never be enough money to solve everyone's problems. You're going to hear very shortly about the gap between what we believe in local government to be the need and the funds we have available. It is substantial. It is a staggering gap. It requires us, again, to be very strategic on how we spend our money. And I believe some of the questions this morning regarding accountability are right on the mark. We need to do a better job at figuring out if we're successful and how successful are we. And we need to be even more flexible in the future and faster on our feet at being able to change when we find out that we're not being as effective as we can be. I guess I'd like to last leave you with a comment about economic development and community development in general. And that is that you will not only in this process look at the budget for the Community Development Fund, but you'll be looking at the budget for the entire Economic Development Department and all of the CSD agencies. My experience in the 2 years of working on the interim work group is that economic and community development is an organic process. It is incredibly complex. The formula that works in one community doesn't work in another one. And you have to be very heads up and very flexible all the time and very open to new ways of doing things. And that's a very hard thing for us to do in government, to be that flexible, that quick on our feet, and that open-minded about new ways of approaching problems. We think that the community solutions approach, we think that the flexibility of the Community Development Fund meets that need, and we would hope that you support the budget. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Questions?
Mr. Chairman, well, I appreciate your hard work and dedication and appreciate your presentation. But I want to know, do you have any kind of criteria, performance measures of the program before you make your decisions? Because it just seems to me some programs have demonstrated success and you give them a cut. And some programs only show 88 cents return for the dollar invested, and you double their program money. So what kind of criteria do you use, and do you have performance measures before you when you make your decision?
Thank you. I'll try and answer that. You asked a very specific question last time, and I didn't answer it directly. The conversation moved off about the small business development centers. And I want to deal with that directly since I know that that's gotten a lot of attention. And if you look at the budget request, what the commission has done so far is basically say we are going to target $1.8 million to small business development centers. That does not mean we've cut their budget. We are acutely aware that there are huge needs out there, and they say that they need at least $2.5 million to meet those needs. And I personally, as a commissioner, believe we will get there. What we have done is we have set as a baseline, we're willing upfront to commit you a minimum guarantee of 1.8. But if you look, we also have $1 million that's available that's not allocated. It's available for other small and emerging business and minority business initiatives. It's the Commission's intent that as we move forward in the biennium that we have money available that so far has not been specifically targeted to meet those needs once we get a better definition of what those needs are and what our total budget is. We didn't think, if I knew we were going to get our total budget approved, then I would have a high degree of assurance that the total amount for the FC Small Business Development Centers would be available, but I don't know that yet until you take your actions. And I also believe that just as a matter of principle, that it is very important to the Commission and the Committee that we not create an entitlement system where there's specific line item guarantees to service providers, no matter how good they are, because this is an excellent, excellent provider. Because once you create that entitlement mentality, you move away from the principles we all care about of efficiency and accountability. And what we're trying to do is hold out a carrot here saying we have the money available, we expect to be able to provide it, but you have to continue to show that you're meeting the goals we jointly agreed on, that you're doing it in the most efficient way possible. And we as a commission are trying to help you improve. And two specific examples with small business development centers. As a commission, we felt very strongly that you had minority access programs over here and small business development centers here, and they had to be working together. So we wanted to hold back some money from both of those entities to be able to say, yeah, the money's there, but you got to work together to get it. And I think we were very, very productive in being able to do that. A second example is, we as a commission felt very strongly that small business development centers have very limited resources and have to stretch them a lot further. And they were just caught up in extensive one-on-one counseling. It's very valuable for the people to get it, but it means that a lot of other people can't get needed services. So we wanted to say, instead of having one-on-one counseling with essentially anybody that walks to the door, put the general information on the Internet so that everybody in the state can get it, whether you know this exists or not, and then use your limited resources to really help the people where you can get the biggest bang for the buck. So we as a commission have tried to say, yes, we can meet your needs, the total $2.5 million, if we get the total budget, but we also want to hold a little bit back to make sure that you're making the improvements we think are necessary, and so we have some mechanism of accountability. And I think the reason I want to focus on this is that, to me, it's a very clear example of outcomes-based budgeting as opposed to entitlement budgeting, and of trying to set up an accountability system and making changes, and why I feel so strongly that you need to preserve the flexibility of the community development fund as opposed to targeted line items.
My question is, do you have the bonus measures before you when you make your decision?
Yes, we do. And this is an evolving process. What we're trying to do as a commission is come to an agreement with the service provider. What are the performance measurements that you are committing to? So, and you have to realize, 2 years ago you told us to change the world. We came up with a blueprint, and as a commission we're in the process of trying to follow that blueprint. And we're now in the first stage of trying to have performance measurements in each of the individual service provider contracts. I will tell you, our partners have done an incredible job in very clearly defining what it is they're trying to accomplish and how they're going to measure it. And I think you'll see as we move forward in this next biennium that economic development in general and our partners in particular are just ahead of any other agency I'm aware of or any other type of service provider in having clear goals and clear performance measurements. So I think you'd be very happy with the progress we've made in a very short time. We're not there all the way, that's for sure, but I think we're committed to get there and further along than anybody else.
Commission, I'd like to ask you to keep your responses very brief. We're getting bogged down here and responses are going about 5 minutes, and we have a work session this morning. So I'd like to have you make any further comments very, very, very brief.
Chair, thank you. I will.
I just wanted to emphasize that an important part of this program is the regionalization and the flexible resources available to regions. If a certain region decides that small business is something that they want to focus on, they can enhance the funding for the small business center in that region with the funds available through the regional program.
Further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Scott. As an elector, Yvonne Eddington.
Mr. Chairman, how when do you want to start housing? How long do we have?
Approximately 9 minutes.
Okay, we'll get started.
Okay.
The
their workstation before full session.
Mr. Chairman, going back to page 4 in the behind the tab, the I think a couple of the previous speakers alluded to the fact that the interim work group discussed several different categories of funding that we need, both centralized and decentralized funding. You'll find those recommendations. I think recommendation 6D in the interim work group report. You don't need to look at it now, but that's. But these categories, you see immediate opportunity, small and emerging business, community assistance, statewide investments, and regional investments, those are derived directly from the interim work group report, and essentially are saying that you need those five kinds of assistance, if you will. So you need statewide investments, that's money that we hold at the State Department that's available for projects that are presented at the, you know, from the local community at the regional level. Regional investments, I mean, these are the two big categories. Regional investments are the ones where we distribute that money out through the Rural Investment Fund and what's now called the Regional Investment Program, formerly Regional Strategies. Then what we were just speaking to, or they were just speaking to, was the small and emerging and community assistance, which are targeted technical assistance from contractors, and finally, that both at the state level, and we recommend at the regional level as well, that there be some money available for whatever you didn't think of when you were setting up your programmatic category. If you go one page behind this at page 5, this shows you in maybe terms that are more familiar to you in terms of specific programs within each of those categories. What programs are we talking about? What's the statutory authority or the initiative? These are all the programs that have some kind of money in them. What we want to do today is begin presenting kind of the overview for statewide investments, which is where all the program option packages and most of the money is. And in order to do that, we asked Yvonne Addington during the interim, really driven by the questions from the interim work group about how do we get a handle on all the need that's out there, and is there a way for us to decide whether this is a black hole or whether we're gaining on it, and are we efficiently getting the dollars where they, so that we're using all the dollars in the way that they get the most leverage and we buy the most for our money. So I'm going to ask Yvonne to who may need to come back on Monday when we renew our community development presentation to at least get you through kind of what that work was, and I think you've all seen the inventory that has billions in project need in it, but she can tell you kind of what the state of the art is in terms of understanding the need for infrastructure investments in particular in the statewide investment category.
Yvonne, if I might, how much time would you need to do an effective job?
I can do it in 5 or I can do it in 20. Sure.
But I'd rather bring you back when we can look at it in its entirety without skipping along through it, because we have some decision packages we need to deal with. And I'd rather deal with it in a comprehensive manner. We have a work session we need to go to this morning. And so if you don't mind, we'll reschedule this for next Monday, I think.
It's a very important topic, and more time would be great.
Yeah, otherwise we're going to try to do this in a 4-minute sprint, and I think we lose sight of what we're trying to do. Is that okay, Mr. Chairman?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me make maybe one last point with the, I'll take one more minute and then you can go to where your other business. And this is just an example of, I think, what Brett and some of the local government folks were talking about. But really two examples that because we had the flexible mechanism of the Community Development Fund, this interim, we were able to deal with much better than we have in the past. The first is that it turned out that because of some early repayments, we had more cash in the Port Revolving Loan Fund than we would have otherwise expected to, and we didn't have to transfer any funds from the Community Development Fund into Port Revolving Loan. Had the legislature, or had we, had to make that decision at the beginning of the biennium, we probably would have put $1 million in the Port Revolving Loan Fund. There would have been no way to get it out of there. Late in the biennium, we had, in the Marine Navigation Improvement Fund, we had a situation that matured in Coos Bay where an earlier dredging project had to partly be redone because of weather that had destroyed part of a dredging project in process. And while the original project budget wasn't exceeded, the budget had been revised downward because we got cheaper bids. The money had then been invested in other dredging projects. We were short in the Marine Navigation Improvement Fund of being able to help pay the bill in Coos Bay. We were able, because of the Community Development Fund's flexibility, we still had money that we hadn't put in, for instance, the Port Revolving Loan Fund. We were able to take care of Coos Bay. That's just an example of, in order to deal with both those situations, you would have had to put extra money in both funds to have it sitting there and be available. Another example is that there was, as you are probably aware, a small shortfall in lottery receipts this biennium. We were somewhat surprised to have all of that hit us in the first calendar quarter of this year. I can't remember what quarter of the biennium that is, we had enough money held back in the Community Development Fund that we could take the whole amount from that. So we hadn't allocated that out, and we didn't have to tell our contractors, for instance, that they had a downsize kind of at the late in their planning stage, as we've always had to do before when we've had lottery shortfalls. So those are just examples of, I think, how we use the money better and keep administration going, the funds more consistent because of this. So I'll close there, and now you've had kind of the overview, and we'll get into the where the money is going and all the new money we're asking for is going to the kind of project that Yvonne will be talking about.
Very thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I want to know, is it possible for you to bring Rubicon's China Market Survey book tomorrow, because the International Trade Division, as you know, is going to make their presentation. It would be nice for members to have a copy of the latest market survey for China.
I have to ask.
You have
to. They have delivered it to you.
Have copies for everybody.
And I will bring it tomorrow.
That would be wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Now we'll close the hearing, public hearing on House Bill 5015. And open the work session on House Bill 5033. House Bill 5033 was the bill that we sent out to the Foreign Ways and Means Committee this week on. And, and Gregory and Bailey, hold your hand there, all your information. You'll see two sets of documents in front of the committee members. Once we passed the Housing and Community Services budget out, we originally deleted the position of the Community Solutions Team. It's for FTE and money to fund those projects. Representative Schrader was in conjunction with co-chairs and the leadership has adopted language for a proposed budget note That language has been handed out to all of you. In addition to that is the Housing and Community Services Department budget, LL4 recommendation. And we'll be in recess just a few moments so we get somebody else in here to vote on the Senate thing. DC is Senator Senate. Back to order, and we're in a work session on House Bill 5033. Georgine Davis.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, good morning. You have before you the memo, and it summarizes very briefly what you did before the passage of 5 of the 8 policy packages. You eliminated the 4 positions and the T21 funding for those positions from package 135, which was part positions that would be used in part for the community solutions team activities. The recommendation this morning is to, well, I should say before that, is that the department has identified alternative funding to the T21. They have agreed to use the bond spread to fund 2 of the positions and transportation money that can be used only for planning for the other 2 positions. That also reduced the general fund match requirement by just slightly less than 1/2. So my recommendation this morning is to approve the 4 positions and the alternative funding that's been identified by the department. Total of $495,305, and of that, $26,571 is general fund. I've shown the dollar split between the other 2 sources of funding, but of course they're both other funds. I'm recommending that the committee consider and approve the budget note that says any Department of Transportation funding used by Housing and Community Services Department will be limited to funds whose use is restricted to planning activities only. In addition to that, you have the sheet of paper before you that is headed Community Solutions Team. This is a budget note that Representative Schrader worked up, and he has discussed this with the co-chairs and chair of this committee. And what it does primarily is a budget note to ensure that the Community Solutions Team does what testimony has indicated that they would do. The State Community Solutions Team, which consists of 5 state agency directors, the directors of Housing, Economic Development, Law and Tribal Land, Conservation and Development, Environmental Quality, and Transportation, shall meet biweekly to solve community development problems and break down institutional barriers between levels of government. Further, the legislature believes regional community solutions teams consisting of selected field representatives of these 5 agencies should be convened to meet at least monthly or more often as local issues arise and work closely at the local level on solving problems and representing state community development interests early in local projects and issues. The 5 agencies must cooperate and supply sufficient, qualified, and empowered staff to support the community solutions team efforts. These regional field staff should have clear and direct access to their respective directors and the necessary authority to solve problems at the local level. In addition, the legislature supports establishing regional coordinators who will coordinate the regional team efforts, will have direct access to the executive and director's offices, and will bring in other agencies as necessary to ensure that issues are addressed or problems are solved. And I would recommend approval of that budget note. My understanding that the proposal is to put this budget note in the budgets of all of the agencies that have community solutions teams.
Correct. All right, is there a discussion? Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, the issue of the resolution of the necessary authority being passed down so that they can solve the problems at the local level, I recognize that there's biweekly meetings and meetings at least monthly of the agencies themselves. How do we know that we have the necessary authority actually passing down to the regional coordinators to actually solve the problems? I guess by the resolution of the problems themselves.
Representative Schrader, do you want to respond to that?
I'll give a try, Mr. Chair. The idea here, as I understood it in talking with Greg Wolf and the agency people and co-chairs, the idea here was not to be too prescriptive, which is, you know, different branch of government and stuff, but the idea being that what I understood, that in housing, for instance, they already have regional field staff that would be empowered to talk directly to Director Refine. And so there'd be a direct access there. In the ODOT budget, they're anticipating it'd be the region directors would be attending these meetings, and if they can't solve the problem right there with their authority, they would go directly to Grace Cronigan. And each agency would have its own key field person that would be able to report directly to the director. If they don't feel they can get at it, so it's a, if they don't have the total authority, the next step is boom, right to the director, who would have the authority, so the local jurisdiction would get fairly immediate resolution.
So this is one step between the local community and the director.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right. Instead of what they have now.
Any questions? If not, Chair would move the LFO recommendation to House Bill 5033 and the Community Solutions Team budget note as indicated by co-initials of the co-chairs, Representative Lewis, Senator Tim. Is there further discussion? Is there objection? One no vote. Representative Starr is reported no. Is there any other no votes? If not, good. Are we ready to come back on again? Okay. Chair would move House Bill 5033 as amended back out to the full Ways and Means Committee for the due pass recommendation. Clerk, call the roll.
Yes.
Aye.
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 Beck.
Aye.
Schrader.
Aye.
Butler.
Aye.
Cass.
Aye.
Cannon.
Aye. And the motion passes. Who do we have to say okay, go ahead and use the same people. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
And if there's nothing before, we are adjourned until 8 a.m. tomorrow.